Good morning, everybody. Welcome. It's a Monday morning, a rainy Monday morning at that, and we welcome you to our program, the 20th of May, 13 minutes past the hour of 9 o'clock, and we are going to talk about all kinds of things today, about this radio station, about the news of the day, and we have a wonderful panel to do that with, and we'll get started in just a second. I just want to quickly remind you that if you'd like to be a part of the conversation, all you have to do is write to us, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Sarah Rogerson joins us, Albany Law School professor who directs the Immigration Law Clinic. Good morning, Sarah.
Good morning.
Very nice to have you with us.
Always
Thank you.
Glad to be here.
Judy Patrick joins us this morning, Vice President for Editorial Development of the at the New York Press Association, longtime editor of the Daily Gazette. Good morning.
Good morning, Joe.
All right. Okay, put this down. I'll actually see you. There we go. Mike Spain is with us. He is back from afar and the former associate editor of the Times Union and our dear friend. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Very nice to have you. Do you have a good, nice trip to Hawaii and beyond?
Yes. May never get back, so we did a lot. A lot of hiking, a lot of beautiful visuals. It's a very different place. I kept hearing the theme to Jurassic Park everywhere I went, you know.
What about Hawaii 5-0?
Well, that's true. There is that. But that's more Honolulu, you know, and that kind of thing. That's not really what Hawaii is. It's amazing that it's a state.
It's not a vice squad?
No. It's amazing that it's a state. I mean, it's a Pacific island, you know. It's so different than the rest of the U.S. And you know, back in 1959 when it became a state,
I remember.
The congressman here in Albany, Leo O'Brien.
Leo O'Brien.
Was
He's a building now.
Right. He was a, yes, right.
He's memorialized. He's a building now.
Right. That's what happens to good congressmen. They become buildings. But he, you know, he held the Paul Tonko seat and he brought them here. You know, he was a major player in getting Hawaii admitted as the 49th state. And when he passed away, Daniel Inouye, the senator who was on the Watergate Committee and famous Hawaiian senator, came to Albany to pay respects. And now he's passed away and there's the airport's named after Daniel Inouye, and the lighthouse in Kauai is named after Daniel Inouye. He's revered over there. It was kind of interesting. But I didn't hear anybody mention
Leo O'Brien.
No, not Leo O'Brien. No one mentioned that either. But it was, you know, the candidate for president, the congresswoman from Hawaii, Gabbard.
Tulsi Gabbard.
Tulsi Gabbard,
she's very good.
She wasn't in the news over there, and you know, I watch the news all the time and look at the papers, but she's not getting a lot of traction over there.
I just want to say hats off to Mike Spain for going all the way to Hawaii and finding a really cool state historical perspective to offer.
Right. Local angle.
It's
the local angle on
well
that.
Well said, Judy.
You can't get away from that.
But I'm back.
Excellent. Well, we're thrilled to have you here. We missed you, and it's good to have you back. Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning. I was up late last night watching the window light up with all of the, you know, the lightning.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Game of Thrones?
No, I thought it was
No, all right.
And what was great is you're supposed to count the seconds between the lightning and the thunder and multiply by 20 or something like that. I don't know what it was. But
I'm sure someone will write in and explain.
Yeah, I'm sure 10,000 people will. And then it was really great. It wasn't good for sleeping in the beginning, but then it calmed down a little bit. And you know what it made me think of, Joe? It made me think of the fun drive.
How do you put that lightning into a bottle?
Made me think of the fun drive. Made me think of where we are right now. We're up to $235,000. The Weekenders did extremely well this weekend, and we've really got to move now. We only have 2 weeks to get to that $500,000 mark in the lockbox, and that would be great because, as you know, we've been getting this thing done in a day and a morning, unbelievable. But if everybody can just do something now in order to do that, somebody, a very good friend, I'm not going to give you the name because she doesn't like it, but she's from Chatham. And she's been very good with us, and she said, I'm going to give it to you when you really need it. I'll give you $5,000 if you can get to 235 this morning. If you can get to 235, we're at 209, 136 right now. That would give us about, $34,000 to go, something like that. My math is not very good. It would be great. if everybody understands that to come here and to hear us on a fun drive is fun. We all get together, but not it's no good if we're talking about this president and the kinds of things that are going on in this country right now. It is beyond sad. It's terrifying. And if we don't have this program, it's not going to be good. So I need and we'll get there. We need $1 million. If we can get halfway there in the lockbox, we can do it in one day. So I'm asking, as we have, so I'm asking everybody to do one little thing, whether it's $5 or $1,000, or like this wonderful lady from Chatham, $5,000, whatever it is. It would be great. It would be great to hear from you. I'd love to hear from you. We all would.
Indeed. 1-800-323-9262. 1-800-323-9262. WAMC.org for more information. And we need to get to the $235,000 point.
Can we do it, Joe?
And the drive. Sure. I think so.
We have
Is that
to 20?
Do
we have
Yeah, to. We can do that.
We have to do it.
We can do that. 1-800-323-9262. 1-800-323-WAMC. We have 1 hour and 20, about 1 hour and 15 minutes. So right. we can do that. 75 minutes. We can do that. 1-800-323-9262-WAMC.org. $5,000 challenge. Don't forget the fun drive begins on June 3rd, which, as Alan mentioned, is 2 weeks from today.
So two scary weeks from today.
Two scary weeks from today. We've got a lot of work to do. So here we go, WAMC.org. All right, let's begin and talk about topics, and we'll remind you of where we are here a couple of times and tell you, give you some updates, but do what you have to do while we're working our way through the many topics of today. Beginning with, there's a lot of different places we could go, and I guess probably the best place is the president's words on Iran. I think that's probably the scariest. Not that we always need to start with the scariest, but well, you know, why not? We'll go there. The president on this matter, last week, a reporter asked the president, are we going to go to war with Iran? And his response was, I hope not.
Which, that was one response.
That was an early response. And then yesterday, when he was the president was on Twitter and was lashing out at a Republican congressman who suggested that the president had committed impeachable offenses. He was calling him a loser and so forth. But then he also went toward Iran and he said, if Iran wants to fight, that will be the official end of Iran. He tweeted late Sunday afternoon after a week in which it appeared that hawkish aides like John Bolton, the National Security Advisor, were seeking to goad the president into military action against the Islamic Republic. Never threaten the United States again, Trump's tweet came shortly after a rocket exploded about a mile from the U.S. Embassy in Baghdad. In the past, Iranian-backed militias have attacked U.S. forces in Iraq. It was unclear if the rocket spurred Trump's message.
Well, and so you really showed us that three different ways this guy has been talking. One of them was, I'm not going to let my right wing supporters goad me into this. My right wing staff goad me into this, and yet he comes out now, and it starts all over again, leading to the question of, does he really want a war? Does he want a war?
Well, it's a frightening thing that, you know, it sounds to me there's a little echo to this and Dick Cheney's influence on George W. Bush, right, pushing him into the, you know, invasion of Iraq back in 2003, sort of trying to make the case that they somehow were responsible for 9/11, which, of course, even the White House acknowledged then they were not. Iraq was not. But it sounds like there is this back and forth going on, and Bolton is leading the charge. I mean, there's people who believe we should go in and knock out the Ayatollahs of Iran, and that would restore it to being a democracy because it works so well in Iraq.
I was just going to say, remember weapons of mass destruction.
Right. And, which there were not.
And which we said here on this radio station, and we had people on who were talking about it again and again. And yet, look at the massive number of lives and everything else that went as a result of that.
You know, I'm increasingly thinking of Trump's style of diplomacy as the drunk guy at a bar diplomacy. He kind of just says whatever he thinks, you know, is going to get a laugh at the bar. And also, I think people are starting to discount his tweets more and more. Nobody really pays attention to them.
You are the best. You know, when you were a newspaper editor, you always held everything sort of in. But now, boy, you come out swinging and you tell the truth. It's fantastic.
Well, and just building on that, the State Department's current programs in Iran have been more effective at nation building, diplomacy, you know, democracy building. I have a lot of friends who are former academics in Iran, and by virtue of those connections, acquaintances who are lawyers and judges in Iran, and there are healthy groups of intellectuals with a lot of momentum and power, who are quietly, you know, sort of planting the seeds for a new democracy in Iran. And it would be a shame, it would be more than a shame, it would be terrible to go in and erase the infrastructure that is currently there that would lend itself more quickly to a diplomatic, democratic solution in Iran.
Well, wouldn't a U.S. aggression fuel and embolden and empower the right wing of Iran to clamp down on any democracy efforts?
That would be my understanding.
Yeah.
And I know that there are Iranian Americans who are following the situation very closely. And so to the extent that the tweets do matter, it's probably just more unsettling than anything else, right? The drunk guy in a bar makes people afraid of what he might do next.
Well, you know, a lot of people, Sarah, say that the tweets don't matter, but the guy is the president of the United States.
Yeah.
This is in fact, he's sitting at the top of the Department of Defense and everything else that we have in this country. When he makes an utterance, people write to us all the time and say, don't report when he says something like that. What? You have to.
Yeah, the Library of Congress is recording. It's going in the archives.
Right. I mean, it is an official statement from the President of the United States.
But the Washington Post just updated their list of false statements. It has reached 10,000.
Yeah, okay? I saw that. Was a couple of days ago, actually.
Yeah, it's probably 11 by now.
Right. Probably 11 by now. But in there, you know, people who agree with Trump and people who disagree with Trump pretty much write off and disregard what he tweets. Mm-hmm. They regard it as blather that is simply political statements aimed at poking the other side, and it has nothing to do with policy, and it has nothing to do with real.
Meanwhile, in Iran, the foreign minister, Mohammad Javad Zarif, I believe, dismissed U.S. President Donald Trump's genocidal taunts and saying that the president should look at history. Iranians have stood tall for millennia while aggressors all gone. Try respect. It works. If Iran wants to fight, that will be the official end of Iran, Mr. Trump tweeted. And they were referred to by the foreign minister as genocidal taunts. Well, that's concerning.
Yeah, you know, maybe this is the end of John Bolton, because, I mean, again, if he really wanted, if the Trump president really wanted peace in the Middle East or didn't want to get involved, why did he appoint John Bolton? And maybe John Bolton is such a high-profile person at this point, and you know, we know how the president does not like to be overshadowed by the people who work for him. Maybe he will be gone by the end of the year.
You know, it's possible that you're right. On the other hand, you know, this is, were you insulted by that?
No, it's on the other hand, you know.
We're just waiting for the
like
other
but,
hand.
Yeah.
No,
go ahead.
It's more than possible that you're right.
But
I'll even make it stronger. But it's the political side. There is the international relations side that we have to worry about here. But there's also the number one thing in this guy's head is that he wins and that he wins re-election. And we all know from day one how he has fired up the base again and again and again. So now how does he symbolically unload a guy who is, for want of a better word, basic to the base, you know, and get rid of him. Of course, he can go on his own and he can be given the word. But I think it, as we get closer to the election, I just saw a statistic that was amazing. Biden is beating Trump by 11% right now. That's a lot of voters in Pennsylvania, which is a key state. That's got to make him think twice before he does anything to alienate the people who are for him.
Yeah, and there's news this morning that Ford is laying off 500 workers. The hits to the auto industry are going to have an impact on the election as well.
Well, yeah. And you wonder if that's why maybe he wants a war, because war presidents are very popular. And maybe I wouldn't put it above him to do something like that.
Getting rid of Bolton, Bolton was brought in by his, his right wing advisors, like Stephen Miller, and they brought in other people too who were Elliot Abrams, who was in the Reagan administration, a very, very right wing Central America policy guy, is in there. I mean, he's surrounded himself with these right wing people, and this is the direction that we're going. So it's pretty awful. And it looks like he's comfortable with these people. And the moderates, like, Mattis as the defense secretary and others, have been pushed out. And others, so more and more he's surrounding himself with these, sort of right-wing individuals who are successful in weighing in and changing and keeping his policy to the right, which is kind of amazing to me.
Is that enough more?
But I don't think America really has a strong taste for a renewed conflict in the Middle East. I mean, too many of us have seen our sons, our daughters, our nephews, our nieces go off, to this war and come back. And that is, a casualty that we have to live with for another generation. I don't know how it polls, but and it seems like that is the top mind thing for the president.
Yeah, and America will have the final say, we hope, if we get there fast enough. But
I need a break.
Okay.
Will you tell me about the guy when we
the
get
guy,
back?
Yeah, the Michigan guy.
In the meantime, we need your help with a lockbox. WMC.org.
Let's clean things up.
We're listening to the Blue Man Group, and the only thing that would make this better is us just doing primal drumming with paint. I think that's what's missing on this, of us just slamming drums with paint splattering all over the place.
I kind of did that yesterday.
my son, on purpose?
Yeah. I got my 9 and 6-year-old to help me paint the front porch.
There you go.
So
how much was on them and how much was on the porch?
They did pretty well.
Excellent. We welcome you to help us out in the fun drive and in the lockbox. WAMC.org. I'll get you a total here in a second. It's very important. We need to get to the $235,000 point in the drive this morning to get a $5,000 challenge from our dear friend in Chatham. So all of that on the table, and we will get started. I'll get you a total here in just a sec.
Thanks, Joe.
In the meantime, we have letters.
Okay. Pierre writes, good morning, panel. I believe you are off the mark. Trump, Bolton, and Pompeo will have their war. And Trump will be able to say it was forced on him by something the Iranians did. Can you pronounce Gulf of Tonkin or WMD? And that is from Pierre. Thank you, Pierre. Appreciate that. And then we heard from Nicholas, who said, Trump tweets. When we examine the 2016 election cycle, we see that Donald Trump had access to tens of millions of dollars in free advertising because the media felt they had to report his words and rallies, and had to report are in quotes. The media can and should be more creative in quickly reporting or commenting on the president's words. Then the media should move on to more specific congressional or local political action for in-depth reporting. Bullies don't always enjoy being ignored. Mike, would you pass this on to Judy, who reads letters from now and then?
I just want to mention about the tweets in the media. I think the media has become more responsible. Just last week, there was an ongoing discussion about whether or not the media should report the names he calls other politicians. And the consensus was, yeah, we probably should continue to report these silly names, but no, don't put them in headlines. Mm. All right, so we got a a letter from Lisa from Poqua.
In
the
subject,
Poqua?
Quake? Dutchess County?
Sure. Probably.
Probably. Trump is a vile, hateful, vengeful, despicable man, in quotes. His genocidal taunts to Iran are horrifying. He's ignorant enough that Bolton could goad him into a war because he has no knowledge of the world or history. For such a fool to be elected, I have to ask, will anyone who voted for him regret it ever? Also, what kind of a man, again, in quotes, could take children away from their parents? His presidency, I'm afraid, is modeled after Game of Thrones. That's Lisa. From Poqua. Someplace down south.
My dear Alan, says Nancy, I just wanted to remind you of 45's plea to the military early on, parenthesis, paraphrase, why can't I use nukes? I wanna use nukes. Wah, love to all, terrified Nancy in Queensbury.
So not a drunk guy at a bar, 2-year-old.
Fit, don't they, in their own weird way?
Not a lot of difference between the two.
This is from Joe. It's a question for Sarah. I know this is off topic, but I would like to know how Sarah feels about issuing driver licenses to undocumented immigrants.
Oh, well, as long as the panel doesn't mind, we can talk about that briefly. That's one of the few bills that's left in session that has a chance of passing by the end of the week, right? I think is this week or next week. The end of session in the state legislature.
Yeah, the end of the week before Memorial Day.
They'll still be around a little in June, probably, right?
Yeah, and this has been, I mean, this isn't the first time it's come up, but the idea is providing driver's licenses for all New Yorkers, which means anyone who resides in the state of New York would be able to obtain a state-issued ID. And there are a lot of public safety reasons for it, and actually a lot of public safety officers, including sheriffs across the state, not just in Albany County, have voiced support for this bill and tweaked it from a public safety perspective to make sure that they can still do, get the information that they need to get about the quote-unquote bad guys and girls in order to carry out their law enforcement mission, while also giving people a safety net, because the alternative is to have people on the road who haven't been trained, to have people sort of stuck in their homes because they can't take their kids to doctor's appointments, they can't go to the grocery store. Think about people in rural areas, the transportation challenges on our farms. This can lead to a lot of isolation, not just of immigrant communities, but other low-income communities. And so it's a great bill. It's been done in many other states. It's been income-generating in some states as well. It's sort of a no-brainer. I hope it gets passed.
So while I completely agree with you and have so stated before these microphones, I do have a question for you. As a professor and as somebody who really is capable of looking at all this, is there a downside to it?
The critics of the bill have cited to the possibility for fraud. I believe that the bill has been drafted to eliminate those sorts of possibilities, especially since that's always a concern for any state issued document. And we've found ways to create them in ways that make it easy to detect fraud.
Well, as our intellectual opponents on this, Sarah, sometimes point out, you are basically rewarding people who have broken the law by allowing them to do this.
I don't know that privilege to drive is a reward, right? But the absence of access to that privilege is a form of discrimination.
Well, it has implications not only for those who can't drive, but those it propels people to drive illegally, which is risky to everybody, et cetera, et cetera. And it doesn't legitimize, or it doesn't address the issue of their immigration status. It's just a way to manage a situation and make it safer for everybody,
That's
sounds
right.
like.
That's right. Yeah. And insurers should love it because it means they'll have more insured.
But if you get hit, I mean, if your car gets broke, you know, hit by somebody driving and they're not insured, that's a nightmare for
that's
you.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Over to Judy. Judy.
All right. We've got Paul, who has an answer to the question about the thunderstorm counting. He says, divide time in seconds between flash and sound by 5 to get plus or minus distance in miles.
Wait. So in other words, you see the lightning bolt? You're looking at your watch. It says seconds. And then you divide by 5?
Right, to get the distance in miles. Now, I don't know how we're going to get the distance in kilometers, but that's miles.
That's not the way I do it. Anyway, but thank you for that.
So if it's 10 seconds, Alan, how far away did the lightning strike?
Yeah, well, I don't know. But I can tell you that I wasn't good at that part. But I can tell you that that in the way I was always taught is you multiply by 20. You know, 1, 2, 3, and you multiply by 20, and that's how far it is away.
What was the second part of that, Judy?
So divide time in seconds between flash and sound by 5 to get plus or minus distance in miles. So it's an approximate.
So plus or minus.
I think that he means approximate.
Oh, would it be approximate?
Yeah.
I thought they meant you could erase time.
So if it's 10, if it's 10 seconds, it's 2 miles
which
away.
Which is heavy. Yeah. Okay. Go ahead.
That gets real deep.
Good morning, says Kathleen on Bolton. I understand that John Bolton was recommended by Fox News host Sean Hannity. War with Iran will be catastrophic in 2020 for Trump if he allows himself to be pushed into it by Bolton and Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. Military families, many of whom support Trump, do not want another war, especially an unwinnable conflict with Iran. Therefore, Trump won't do it. Kathleen in Ellington. Okay. Well, Joe, you got an update on how we're doing on the
We are at 212,000, so that's 3,000 up, but we still have about 17 to go to make the $5,000 challenge, you see.
Well, everybody, you're sitting here with us. We're all holding hands.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Is it really that funny? Really? No, go ahead.
Kumbaya.
I was going to try that one, Mike. It didn't work. But okay, so therefore, the impetus is we got to do it. We've all got to do it together because we've always done it together. That's what makes WAMC WAMC. That's what distinguishes us from everybody else. We do it together. We've made it work together. And I'm counting on everybody. Hey, you say you'll be there. You say you'll have our backs. This is the time. Put something in that lockbox. But right now, we're in trouble.
We're in trouble. Two things. One is that we only have until about 10:25 to do this in. But also, we have $5,000 challenge, and we need to make about $20,000 now.
Oh, boy.
$20,000 to get $5,000.
Now, can we do it? We can if everybody just says, okay, we only have 2 weeks to get to this $500,000 mark. If we can do this now, we're on track. We'll make it. If we can't, this will be the vortex of the entire effort.
And it's really whatever you can do.
It is.
It's at WAMC.org. And at 1-800-323-9262, we have wonderful staff. They're standing by. They're ready to take your calls. 1-800-323-9262. But,
You know, Joe, if everybody...
You don't want to sound desperate, but a little desperate.
Exactly. You know, if everybody who you'd ever interviewed on the radio were to do something right now... It would be good.
Well, I got to start. Like, that would be a good idea, Alan. You just put in a cap. You put on the, what do they call that thing?
The meter.
The meter. Yeah. Get the meter running. And then at the end, say, oh, that's great. You owe us.
Especially if you're a poet. Meter.
Oh, that's right.
Meter counts.
Good meter joke. Yeah. We'll take a break. We'll be back. We'll give you a total, and then we'll keep going. WAMC.org, 1-800-323-9262.
We need $20,000. Do something now.
We'll be right back. WAMC.org. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. 1-800-323-9262, 1-800-323-WAMC, 1-800-323-9262.
And Joe, this is when the whoosh factor takes over. This is when...
Or has to, yes.
Has to. This is as you get, the way that I've defined the wish factor is you fill up your sink with water, right? Then you pull out the plug.
I'm going with the sink, sure.
And then very, very slowly, you get a little tiny thing that you see, you know. And then as it goes down, you get whoosh! And that's the same thing in fund driving. In our fund drives, you get the wish factor. As we get closer to needing that $500,000, everybody gets active and says, Alan, I've told you I'd be there. I will. Gang, Joe, everybody, let's go. Let's make this happen. Let's get a whoosh.
1-800-323-9262, 1-800-323-WAMC, 1-800-323-9262, 1-800-323-WAMC.
Or WAMC.org,
that
which works
is it.
Just fine.
Yes, it works fine. Yeah, it makes the staff happier. So that's good. WAMC.org, and let's go. We have a lot of money to make in just about 40 minutes or so. So WAMC.org.
Joe, what do you think about that Republican congressman out there in Michigan saying, okay, I've had enough, and goes after Trump tooth and nail? And,
well, that was the other half of that story that we opened with, right? And I found it interesting because I'm from Michigan, and I looked up the congressional district that he's in because it is very interesting that he would be the first one. And it turns out that his congressional
the first Republican to
come out against Trump on impeachment, and he it turns out his county his congressional district. Is what I would call the fun place in the state. It's where we would go in high school if we wanted to have a good time. We'd go to the mall up in Battle Creek because there was nothing. I grew up in a rural community near the border of Indiana, and so we would always drive up to Battle Creek to have a good time.
And then a bowl of cornflakes.
Yeah, I was going to say, with cereal.
And Kellogg's.
Everybody knew that. Okay, well, so what did you find out?
So I found out that his congressional district also is one of the 108 congressional districts that intersected with one or more pivot counties. So these are counties that voted for Donald Trump in 2016 after voting for Obama in 2008 and 2012.
Interesting.
And they're located in 34 states, but Iowa had 31 of those counties. Probably not surprising, given Iowa politics. But it's interesting. Michigan doesn't get a lot of attention or a lot of play. And it's interesting that he made this political calculation. I wonder if that means that the pivot counties are ready to swing back away from Donald Trump.
I couldn't agree more with you, Sarah. I think that, look, there are two possibilities here. One is that we are witnessing a true profile in courage. Somebody, according to the Jack Kennedy definition, who eschews political advantage in order to do what's right. That is certainly possible. And I have a feeling there are a lot of Republican senators and congressmen who understand exactly what I'm talking about, but who are gutless in order to do that.
Well, if enough do it, it will become politically safe to do it. It's not politically safe to do it now. And is there any sense in what his constituents have said about this?
No, Mike, but I'll tell you what it is. There's a sense of what Trump's response has been. It's been frantic. I mean, he's really after this guy today.
He called him a loser. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, you guys. This is just wishful thinking. He's an outlier. He's always spoken his mind. He's a libertarian candidate. He has a Facebook page where he describes his rationale for every single vote. He's the only one out there. There's not going to be a parade of Republicans following him.
Well, no wish factor?
No wish factor.
And on the other hand, why in the world would Trump take him so seriously? You know, he's probably sitting up there with his advisor saying, well, do I ignore this or do I respond to it? By responding to it, he gives it life.
No slight is too small for the president.
Mm-mm. Yeah.
Well, if people are paying little attention to his tweets, as some polls are indicating, then it really doesn't matter that he calls this guy a loser. It just sounds like brick-brack back and forth, and we sort of shut out the clutter. You know?
This guy suggested impeachment after the Comey firing. I mean, he's been out there opposing the president. I mean, he is a true man of his own principles. He will vote as what he believes in time and time again. I think on his Facebook page after he announced this latest position on impeachment, he got both pro and con from his constituents.
Well, it's interesting. Can you be pro-Trump and still say this is my congressman and I respect him for speaking his mind.
Yeah. I mean that's sort of the libertarian base that he's cultivated, right? Sort of a do no harm kind of situation. And I think they can that some of his constituents can hold those two truths at the same time.
And then too, there is the question of history. In other words, how many people are saying, look, when it's all over, some people are going to be counted as having been on the right side and some people will not. And this guy now says, maybe thinking, hey, you know, it's one thing to have on your tombstone congressman. It's another thing to have been a congressman who did something extraordinary, because those are the ones we remember in life.
Well, the congressional district is overwhelmingly white, 87%, I think, at the last census. So it might also be a bellwether for the moderate white voter, and that might also explain Trump's outrage, because he figures if he makes an example out of this guy, then fewer are likely
Absolutely.
To follow, and then they can pull this. And they can look at the white moderate vote in the middle of Michigan and say,
also,
how did this play out here?
Yeah, so you're right. But it's also a warning, right?
Definitely.
For every other congressman, don't even think about it, because that's what's so dangerous to Trump.
Right. A primary challenger has already stepped forth last night, although the challenger said he'd been planning on it for a couple of months and was going to announce on the 4th of July. But now so this guy will be challenged.
And where does somebody send him money, send Amish money, if you
will? WAMC at
org.
Yeah, WAMC.
Yeah. No. That would be wrong.
Yes.
But a contribution to the fund drive in honor of this congressman
yeah,
in Michigan
so
might be accepted,
point.
Is what you're saying.
That's what I mean.
All right, let's go on to other story. Oh, do we have another one?
No, we don't have any more letters, but do we have a roving total?
We'll get a... The rover has to get to the roving total, but I think let me work on that in a second.
Okay.
And we'll move real quick here on to other things. Anybody have anything to say real quick while I try to...
Hey, that Morehouse College thing was a great
oh my
story,
God.
Wasn't it?
I don't know about anybody else, but I had a tear in my eye.
Oh, my God.
That was extraordinary.
So 400 college graduates are sitting there, some of them facing up to $90,000 in college debt. And the commencement speaker, who is a billionaire, says...
And an alum.
Well,
says,
he was the honorary degree awardee.
Yeah.
He went to Cornell and Columbia, graduate work in Columbia, but he was the honorary degree recipient. So he said, I'm one of you. And one interview I read was with a kid who had gotten up real early to get a good seat, and he was really tired, and he was like half asleep during the commencement speakers after another. And then all of a sudden, wait, what? What'd he say? You know, I don't owe $40,000
yeah,
in debt now.
Fantastic.
And the mothers and fathers got up and cheered also.
Yeah. And it's fitting because it's Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s alma mater as well.
Yes, and right. It's a significant school. It's black men, mostly black men. I mean, it is integrated.
It was a great story because even the president didn't know.
Right. And it can be a truly transformational gift in honor of for all these students. It's especially with making the decisions about where they're going to work. They don't have to worry so much about that debt.
But I'm still thinking about what you said, Joe. $90,000 in debt some of these kids come out of college with. I mean, they're just saddled by it. People, I've read where families are, the husband and wife are still paying off loans when their kids are going to college taking on loans.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that'll be us. Yeah. I have another house in student loans still. Mm. I just was lucky enough to lock in a 3% interest rate.
Yeah, one of the
when those were possible.
One of the anecdotes from the story was and they interviewed a father who said he was thinking he was going to have to work another 10 years to help his son pay off his debt, and now he wasn't going to have to do that.
Yeah.
And the fact that this philanthropist has been kind of under the radar for many years. He donated, I think, $20 million to the African American Museum in Washington a few years ago. But he's the kind of guy who gives without making a big thing about, like a lot of your donors, they don't want their names on the radio. Sometimes when you attach a name to something, it does bring more dollars. I can see the value in that.
There's no question.
But, you know, some people who give selflessly, who don't want, you know, a big pat on the back, that's a wonderful thing. Yeah.
I'll tell you the other thing, too, that could get lost in the story, and I hope that it doesn't, but he was very, very clear of what he wanted them to do with it, is pay it forward. Take this money and know that you have been given this. Now, I'm going to put fuel in your tank. He used an analogy of the bus. I'm going to put fuel in the tank, and then you drive this bus to the places that it needs to go. Mm-hmm. And I think that was really important.
Yeah, and it's, you're right, Judy. I really wasn't aware of who he was. Robert F. Smith, he's the richest black man in America, and he's a billionaire, and he's made his money with, you know, computer programming investments, and he's a shrewd businessman who went to Cornell University and then got his graduate degree at Columbia. But he grew up in Denver in a mixed racial neighborhood and went to public school, so he's an outstanding individual who has succeeded, and he wants to enable others to have that same success. It's really remarkable.
Yeah, so billionaires can spend $92 million on a shiny metal dog, or they can pay off student debt.
Well, and that's exactly what we can leave this segment with, which is what I was going to ask you. Would you want to be the next billionaire to make a commencement speech, say, next weekend?
No.
What pressure is on you?
Is Bill Gates slated to speak at any college?
Hey, buddy, pay up.
Absolutely true. There, you know, we saw the example of a guy wanting to pay off, put kids through charter school into college, and he would pay their whole college thing. And then that was taken up by a number of people who did exactly the same thing.
Excellent. We will take a break. When we come back, we will return and have a full total for you. We have a ways to go, though, to make this money. We have a $5,000 challenge on the table. We need it desperately to keep us on track. WAMC.org, 1-800-323-9262, online at WAMC.org.
$5,000 from a lady in Chatham.
We need it. Please do what you can. WAMC.org. Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. So it's we're reacting to is the information having to do with the fund drive and the lockbox. So we needed $25,000 to make $5,000, and now we need $19,188.
Well, listen, could we do that? Is it possible? Absolutely. Have we done that in the past? We have, under extraordinary circumstances, we have. But all it takes is somebody internalizing this and saying, Alan, Joe, Judy, Mike, Sarah, we're going to make sure you guys can be on talking the way you're talking now without interruption by everybody just going and putting $10 in, $5 in, $100 in. And if you do it now, it would be great. And we can do it. I know we can do it.
WAMC.org. You can also go to 1-800-323-9262.
Come on,
you can call that number.
Let's go.
1-800-323-9262.
You're breaking my heart.
WAMC.org. And we have $5,000 challenge that we lose if we don't get this money, $19,000. So there you go. 1-800-323-9262. We have a couple of letters. We'll go to those, and then we'll talk about Deutsche Bank.
Okay, Neil says, Trump seems to feel an overwhelming need to appear strong. If he had taken Psych 101 in college, he would know that it is the weak and insecure who bully and bluster to reassure themselves of their worth. Are we to go to war to soothe this man's ego? And that's from Neil. Thank you, Neil. And TM says, dear members of the panel, one point I fear you have all missed so far in the discussion is Saudi Arabia. The Saudis and the Iranians have been enemies for centuries, and Trump Incorporated have been currying favor with the Saudis, as we all know. Who imagines that the Saudis are willing to do anything for Trump with nothing in return? The Saudis would love for us to strike Iran. Thanks for your wonderful show and be well. And that's TM in Austerlitz, New York. That's great. I love Austerlitz because my band plays the Blueberry Festival there every year, don't you know? And then also we heard from Rick in Beckett. Hi, Mike. I just returned from Hawaii also. I was particularly struck by the aloha attitude there, being laid back and helpful. Maybe a Hawaiian candidate for president or at least vice president would do this country a lot of good. And that's Rick in Otis.
No, I agree. People in Hawaii are laid back. Perhaps it has to do with them being so many thousand miles away from Washington, D.C. I don't know.
Wasn't Obama?
He's family. A native son. He was born in Honolulu. It's been verified.
Multiple times.
Yeah,
multiple
we have. Yes, many, many times. All right, let's go to other stories. And this is the Deutsche Bank story. And having to do with suspicious activity in Trump and Kushner accounts that Deutsche Bank staff saw. Anti-money laundering specialists at Deutsche Bank recommended in 2016 and 2017 that multiple transactions involving legal entities controlled by Donald Trump and his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, be reported to a federal financial crimes watchdog. The transactions, some of which involved Mr. Trump's now-defunct foundation, set off alerts in a computer system designed to detect illicit activity, according to five current and former bank employees. Compliance staff members who then reviewed the transactions prepared so-called suspicious activity reports that they believe should be sent to a unit of the Treasury Department that polices financial crimes. But executives at Deutsche Bank, which has lent billions of dollars to the Trump and Kushner companies, rejected their employees' advice. The reports were never filed with the government. The nature of the transactions, not clear. At least some of them involved money flowing back and forth with overseas entities or individuals which bank employees considered suspicious.
This is really disgusting. So now you have Deutsche Bank, which for some reason gave Trump a lot of money over the years, a lot of money, and back and forth, and there's a procedure, and the procedure is if you see something irregular, you report it, and then if that report has some credence, you let the feds know about it. Well, that didn't happen with Deutsche Bank, and their executives came down hard on the people who were working there following orders, at least one of whom I believe got canned.
Right. The source of this story is a Tammy McFadden who had been in there. That had been her job to look for evidence of fraud and money laundering, et cetera, and then report it upwards so that it could go to the feds for independent review. And she was pushed out, and she's now suing them. So she does have an axe to grind, but it does continue a narrative that already has been established that Deutsche Bank had a special relationship with the Trumps and the Kushners. And after every other bank in New York City in the U.S. would not fund Trump's real estate ventures, they continued to do it. And remember, they are a bank that has been fined by the European authorities for assisting Russian oligarchs in money laundering, et cetera, et cetera. So there's a lot of shady suspicions about this whole relationship between Trump and Deutsche Bank, who he is suing now so that he can block them from giving any documents on all this to congressional committees.
This may be an oversimplification.
Yeah.
But if you and I decided to go on a road trip and went to, say, Tucson, and we tried to use our bank cards for like a hotel and a car, it would set off the fraud alert, and our cards would be shut down because we didn't report it to our bank that we were traveling.
Yes. Had that happen once.
Yes.
Always report now.
We've all had it happen. But bringing up the point that the computer program says, ding, 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 this doesn't make sense. Somebody calls up and says, all right, well, we're fine. Everything's fine. And but then you look into it and say, oh, well, no, this really does seem suspicious. And then you go to the head of the bank and say, no, this really, really seems suspicious. And they're like, meh.
As it was for the Trump Foundation.
You right.
Know,
right.
Former AG, New York AG, Barbara Underwood, was effectively shut down the Trump Foundation. I wondered, the connection wasn't clear from the reporting, but I wonder if it was in part due to some of these flagged reports from that were referred to the special committee.
Sure, it was.
Was it?
The reporter I read said that part of the suspicion involved the Trump Foundation.
Yeah,
and back and forth.
I think just the direct connection between between these flagged reports and the the subsequent investigation. I wonder if that was just the openers, I guess is what I'm saying. And, you know, we don't know what else is pending in the AG's office.
And I think it highlights why the public wants to know more about Donald Trump's finances, because if he is beholden to people outside of this country, what will he do in terms of policies or that will benefit them? That, I think that's why the public has a right to know. It's not just political gamesmanship. It's a real reason that we want to know how his finances work and how he may still be beholden to people who in Russia who lent him money for or things. You know, I always he seems like such an America first kind of guy. It's interesting that all his money to make his projects work came from overseas.
Yeah.
Well, you should give a shout out to the New York Times, who've been really following this well.
They
absolutely.
Rich, is the reporter. Really great work.
Yep.
And you wonder where it's going to go and where it's going to lead, and I don't know, maybe nowhere. I'm not sure. But
hey, I would take white collar crimes convictions over impeachment any day of the week. I mean, it could go into some very difficult places for the president, and raise interesting questions. Given the timing of the acts, you know, were the acts committed before he was president, while he was president. What's the impact? He might never want to leave the White House simply because as soon as he does, he's going to get loaded up.
Well, I think that's true. I'm also incredibly interested in this business as to whether or not the Justice Department finding that a president cannot be, we all assume it's so, but that a president cannot be indicted until they are impeached. I happen to think that's wrong. I don't know where that exists. I know that the Justice Department comes up with that and says that that's the issue. But I've never believed it, and I don't know that it certainly isn't in the Constitution. It certainly isn't in the law. So
yeah,
where are they getting this from?
Neil Katyal, the attorney who drafted the rules on the special counsel, has been has been making a lot of statements around this and raising a lot of questions about the legitimacy of that rule and sort of how firm it is and whether it's really a department policy or something that's been regulatory mandated.
Meanwhile, it doesn't seem to be affecting, even though there is a president in office who had the possibility of whether it be white-collar crimes or to be indicted as a sitting president of the United States, does not seem to be of impacting his poll numbers, at least now, adversely of those who support him.
Well, I keep coming back to Berlusconi in Italy. He kept winning and winning and winning, and everybody knew how bad he was. And yet his basic group that was behind him was, don't convince me with the facts. Don't tell me anything. It's awful.
Well, and his vile behavior was actually
absolutely
revered and held up.
Yeah.
Including
Hey, Joe, how are we doing on this whole thing? Are we getting any traction?
Sure. We're
speaking of vile behavior.
Yeah.
Sort of non sequitur.
We have about $18,900 to go. Ooh. And we have about 7 or 8 minutes. So
in 7 and 8 minutes. 18 people, or 1,000, or 36 at 500.
There you go.
Would do it. And I'm going to just ask you, if you've got an extra 1,000 right now, if you do, not everybody does, but if you do, it would be great for you to put it right in right now at WAMC.org or call 1-800-323-9262. Come on, let's go. I'm feeling this fainting sensation in the bottom of my tummy. It's not good.
While we wait,
I can't eat until 12 anyway.
While we wait for you to call or to go to your computer, we will talk about this story, which is we talked a lot about the abortion bill in Alabama last week. We continue to talk about it this morning. The president joined a chorus of Republicans trying to distance themselves from new state laws banning the vast majority of abortions, though he emphasized what he called a strongly pro-life stance he has held throughout his time in the White House. Without referring specifically to an Alabama law enacted last week that makes performing abortions a felony unless a pregnancy seriously risks a woman's health, Trump reiterated his position that abortion should be legal following rape or incest. In a series of tweets shortly before midnight on Saturday, the president wrote that his view is, quote, the same position taken by Ronald Reagan.
That's not true.
However,
one of the positions taken by Ronald Reagan.
In aligning with the memory of the popular GOP figure, Trump disregarded that Reagan had, as California governor, signed a liberal abortion law, and as president, nominated the U.S. Supreme Court the first female justice, Sandra Day O'Connor, who voted to uphold Roe versus Wade, the 1973 Supreme Court decision that legalized abortion nationwide, and later challenges to that ruling.
Donald Trump is the best thing that ever happened to Ronald Reagan's legacy.
Just makes him look good.
The contrast gets starker and starker.
Yeah.
But if there is an upside, I think, on this issue of these horrible draconian laws being passed state by state, it's that the public's getting more of an education, just like the public got more of an education around immigration issues, and public opinion is swinging the other way. Although I'm not convinced that public opinion was in favor of any of these laws that passed because of gerrymandering and a lot of the things that happened to suppress the vote and what we know about the polls. But there does seem to be a pretty effective public education campaign that's been in place since the 60s and 70s, but this is an opportunity for it to really get a lot more traction in headlines and educate the public about abortion, what it means, and what the consequences are of these really awful bans that are being put in place in these states.
But don't you guys think that the rape and incest thing was a major miscalculation on the part of the legislature? They wanted a clean slate. It was in one house in the bill. They took it out. And now it's something that most people just can't abide, the idea of a 12-year-old being impregnated by an uncle or a father and then having to have the child under this. And if the doctor performs an abortion, goes to jail for 99 years, it's unbelievable.
Well, it seems like it's pushing. Polls show that Americans have accepted abortion as being legal. They may be opposed to it philosophically or religiously or morally, but that it should be a there's generally public support for it. But now it's gone left and right. I mean, they'll point to laws like New York recently enacted that the critics of abortion will say, allows late-term abortions. The public does not like late-term abortions, whatever that means. And yet now it's going the other direction. Now it's become really, really restrictive. There was a congressman or a state legislator in Missouri when they passed their restrictive bill last week that referred to consensual rape.
Such thing.
Right, right. I mean, it's an oxymoron. After being beat up, he said, well, you know, he was a police officer in his previous work, and he said he tried to defend it by saying that a lot of rapes were consensual, which whatever that means. They weren't somebody just grabs somebody off the street and rapes them, that kind of thing. And he got beat up for it. But it just shows you the extraordinary polarization that this issue continues to be and has been for decades now.
Yeah, let's be clear. Just because they ban abortions doesn't mean abortions will stop. What it will mean will people will be getting unsafe abortions and
absolutely
women will die.
Right.
You can't ban abortions. This has gone on for centuries. There was an interesting, is it Call the Midwife, Ask the Midwife? The last couple of their episodes have dealt with abortion. It's a very fascinating take on it because, this group of midwives has encountered an abortionist and, she went to trial and she got convicted. And it just talked about, why some women have to have abortions and what the impact it is on their lives.
And I'm old enough, Judy, to remember what it was like before Roe v. Wade.
Yeah.
And it was terrible. And people really were getting killed as a result of this.
Yeah, it seemed like the mantra of the Democrats prior to all this was that abortion should be legal, safe, and rare. And that's gone. Now it's either they should be on demand forever or they should be banned forever. And it's just tearing people apart.
Yeah, we need to talk about making money available for childcare to support women raising children.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about education. There's a whole range of issues that should be discussed when we're talking about abortion. It's not just about abortion.
Well, and I think that the left view of this has been mischaracterized by the right. The idea of abortion available at every turn. The Daily podcast has done a really interesting two-part series on following women who have gone to abortion clinics, why they made the choice to have an abortion, what decision-making processes go into, what the emotional labor involved is. And so it's a mischaracterization, I think, of the left, too, that continues to push people, but largely created by extreme anti-abortionists.
Yeah, the TU has a story today that says Elise Stefanik, she's the congresswoman for the North Country, has been trying to enlist more women across the country to run for office, Republican women, and how this issue has just really stopped that.
Yeah, you know, forget it.
You know, it's really turned off women within the Republican Party.
We are out of time. My thanks to everybody. We still have a long ways to go, but we need whatever you can do for the lockbox. WAMC.org, 1-800-323-9262. Everything on the table counts.
Everything on the table counts.
1-800-323-9262, okay. WAMC.org. My thanks to Sarah Rogerson. Judy Patrick, Mike Spain, we'll see you tomorrow.
Yeah, my Tuesday day.
Excellent. And Alan, thank you. We'll be back right after this.